This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
This President's Day, upgrade the look of your home without breaking your budget. Save up to 40% site-wide on brand new window treatments now at Blinds.com. Blinds.com, the number one online retailer of custom window treatments, is the better way to give your home the presidential treatment. Blinds.com makes it easy with free virtual consultations on your schedule and samples delivered directly to your door, fast and free. Choose from trending woven wood shades or upgrade to motorized. Blinds.com has everything and more, all with upfront pricing and no hidden fees. Need help with installation? Blinds.com can handle it for you. Or DIY with expert guidance from our design pros. With over 25 million windows covered and our 100% satisfaction guarantee, you can count on Blinds.com to deliver results you'll love. Shop Blinds.com's President's Day Mega Sale Last Chance right now and save up to 40% site-wide, plus a free professional measure. Up to 40% off site-wide at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Obviously, Kevin Petullo, you probably saw the news yesterday, the new offensive coordinator of the Eagles. Now, he has not yet spoken as the offensive coordinator of the Eagles, but he did speak recently, knowing that, the job could come his way. And a reporter named Chase Sr. tracked down Petullo around Super Bowl coverage.
Shout out to Chase. I know Chase.
You do?
Yeah, he was in when I went to grad school at Temple. He was undergrad at the same time we were at the Temple radio station together. Yeah, we did the show with Zach Gelb at Temple Radio.
Very cool. Well, congrats to Chase Sr. because he got some good audio from Kevin Petullo. Let's listen to Petullo again. This was, I think, prior to the Super Bowl, I believe.
Yes,
talking
it was.
About what his role with the Eagles has been, because we all wonder, who is he? What's he done? How involved has he been? All that stuff, because he now gets to a bigger chair here as the OC. Here's Petullo on what his role had been.
Nick said that sometimes he'll run head coaching managerial duties through you. So can you just explain your role and your relationship with Nick and how you help him through an assortment of things?
Yeah, I think since we got here in 21, him and I have worked very closely together. And some of that stuff's been, like I said, anything from an offensive role or a head coaching type role. And a lot of it can be whether it's staffing, whether it's decisions, personnel, scheduling, things like that. So it's really a lot of the day-to-day stuff that a head coach does. I've been very privileged to be a part of, which has been very, great for my career working forward. And then as far as the offensive stuff, since 21 as well, I've kind of been in the forefront with the offensive coordinator working on everything from day-to-day stuff to planning to, the play calling stuff on game day and structuring things. So I've had a unique seat, and it's been great for my career. And wherever it goes, it goes. But I'm very fortunate to be the role I'm in and be trusted for what I do. And it's been a lot of fun working with Nick.
All right, so that's Petullo, a couple weeks ago.
I love that he was a big part of the planning, and we heard that from Nick way back when, that he was a huge part of the planning when he was in Indianapolis and in San Diego. That didn't make him a good play caller.
Well, it didn't make Brian Johnson an effective offensive coordinator who was involved as well. So
I'm just saying,
it really is
a separate concept. Like, you can be an incredible play designer planner of an offense, but then on game day not be able to get into the rhythm of the offense and the way that Jalen is feeling, the way that he's where you could be adverse to tapping into what makes him best.
Well, you're right. They are two different things. Play design and play calling in the moment are two totally different things.
No question.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we have no idea.
Well,
but we just have to see.
Well,
we owe them, I believe, the benefit of the doubt to some degree.
To some degree.
Coming off a Super Bowl win.
They certainly deserve some runway. And I think that they learned from the whole coordinator thing, the mistakes that they made in the past. And I think that they would not make this decision unless they felt very comfortable about it.
Right.
After having learned through what happened a couple of years back and where they were last year, I think that, you know, Howie Roseman is one of those guys who makes adjustments. And I think that he would not. He's one of those guys that I don't believe will make the same mistake twice.
You know, and what, Ruben? I'll give that a maybe, yeah. And I'll tell you why. So I know it's nice to lean into feeling that way, and I agree with John's phrase that they, meaning Howie and Nick, deserve the benefit of the doubt. I think, John, you said to some degree, or whatever you just said there.
Yeah.
Because, Ruben, I will say this. They also had success in 22, totally botched 23. I mean, totally botched it. And, you know, I also know...
And then told us they didn't. If they knew how to fix it, they would have.
Well, yeah.
Which is,
and they eventually did for 24.
But they did fix it.
No, they did. But I guess what I'm getting at, Ruben, is this: what we don't know on the outside is this. If the Eagles' season had ended January 10th instead of February 9th, would Kevin Pitullo be who they hired if they had the entire NFL to hire from?
Probably not.
Well, I don't know. Maybe not. I'll say maybe not. Maybe probably not.
I mean, the timing factor.
I don't think it's a definite probably not, though.
No, like, it's not a definite
I think it's definitely
probably
a maybe.
Not.
Like, this is Sirianni's guy. Like, he's his right hand man. If they thought they were going to lose him, like, they might have hired him either way.
I know, but I also know.
You might have heard about interviews.
Like,
you heard nothing.
The Lions yeah. got to hire an offensive coordinator before the Eagles.
Sure.
The Jets got to hire an offensive coordinator. Like, I don't know.
That's why I think it's a maybe.
It is a maybe. Yeah. It's a maybe. It's amazing. So it just complicates it. All right, 215-592-9494. Let's get to Tim right now in South Philadelphia. What's going on, Tim?
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing?
Doing great, Tim.
World chance, man. I had a feeling like, for seriously, like the NFC Championship Super Bowl, I was telling my wife all week. I just had a feeling. We were just... Our defense were dogs. We was just it wasn't going to be close at all.
I was shocked, Tim. I'm just being honest with you. And I do think, having seen it now, if they played the game 10 times, I think the Eagles would have won them all. And I think they would have won a bunch of them in blowouts. But going into the game, I did not feel that.
I just had that gut feeling. I just felt like kind of like how Saquon said in his speech, like, no matter how many times they was there, how many times they won.
Yeah.
Ever played a team like ours? You know what I mean.
I do. Right. Yeah, I do.
But I'm hoping they could figure something out and bring at least Becton and Baum back.
Yeah, I don't think I think it's reasonable, especially with the increase in the money we've got to use. Yeah. I think that Zach Bond is not looking to break the bank, that he knows that he is most valuable here, and Mekhi Becton is in the same position.
Well, I'll just say this, Tim. When John says, you know, that Bond's not looking to break the bank, I don't know that to be true at all. It's his first and will be his only shot at a massive payday.
Yeah.
So... You know, now look, is it possible, I think this is what John's sort of alluding to, is it possible that if he gets offered $30 million here and $35 million elsewhere, that he says, you know what, I'll do the $30 million here because I'm happy and I'm comfortable here, and let's go try to win it all again. Yeah, that is possible. But if he gets offered $30 here and $50 somewhere else?
Oh, my God.
We're talking money here.
Having been in that position.
The guy's been he's been paid like a special teamer.
99.9% of the time, it's about the money, guys. Okay, mm-hmm. Loyalty is one thing. It's not about loyalty necessarily, but
this is such a unique scenario, though.
Everybody's different, but I will
remember
tell you.
Remember, Vic Fangio took him
about
and said,
the money.
Yeah,
hey, you're not
you,
a special
about
teamer.
The money.
And by the way, I think especially for a guy who hasn't
this
made...
is so like, extenuating,
well,
though.
It's different.
Now, I'm with you, Joe. Like, right? He hasn't made money yet. Like, it's one thing if he was a first-round pick that.
Like
or this
Becton.
Or that. Exactly.
Becton actually has probably made, I'm just going to take a guess here, guys.
30, 40, something like that?
I was going to say 10 times more money than Bond.
Yeah. Oh, without a doubt.
Right,
yeah.
He was a first-round pick and a high first-round pick.
I mean, even the contract, the one-year deal they signed him to is double. Like, it was $3 million for Bond, it was $6 million for Becton here,
right,
you know?
Right, all right, Tim, fascinating stuff. Give me an answer, notable replacement, good or bad?
anybody say Aunt Viv from Fresh Prince?
No, it had to be.
Great answer.
Good answer, my man, for sure. All right, Ruben, I need a ruling from you because we're about to play audio because, you know, we're going to be playing it the rest of our lives. The backward leap by Saquon and the Cooper DeJean interception return in the Super Bowl. Now, we had a poll last week, which was the play of the year. I know which one won. You might not know. Both DeJean yesterday on WIP and Saquon yesterday on the Today Show on NBC talked about those plays. So I want to play the audio, both of the plays and their talking yesterday. But prior to that, Ruben, which do you think was the play of the year?
I think DeJean, just because of the situation.
More important.
To win a championship. And I think that really set the tone. And it made it sort of happen. I think athletically, as far as in one individual play, I'm sort of
clearly
playing a political. It's got to be Barkley. Right. I'm playing political. But so, as far as if you're going to, you know, if you're going to really ask me the question, which was the most important play of the season?
Well, we didn't say most important. We said play of the year
Cooper
so it could be determined as
Cooper
people.
DeJean.
All right. So 54% said Cooper, 46% said Saquon. I think it should be Saquon, but look, it's debatable. Let's play them both. Let's start with the Saquon play. We'll go in sequential order of when they occurred. So Saquon was an all-time athletic, brilliant play. Let's first listen to Marilyn Mike's call of the play, then what Saquon said yesterday about it. Here's Marilyn Mike. I guess this is, I think, back in October.
He fires it out in the flat to Barkley, who beats one man, spins past another, leaps over a third, and comes down at the 30.
What was that? I've never seen that move, and I've been watching football all my life. He hurdles a guy backwards. How do you jump over a guy backwards?
He did.
What am I watching?
So good. So good. All right, so let's listen.
Also funny, real quick, we never talk about it, but it was a passing play.
Yeah.
You know, we think about the year Saquon had running the ball. Yeah. Like, the play that we'll remember was actually a pass. Yeah. It's kind of funny.
In the flat, and he makes the first two guys miss, and then, you know, the ultimate with the leap. All right, let's listen to Saquon yesterday. He was on the Today Show. Cool stuff with Saquon on that national platform. And this was maybe more than I remember him doing in the past, a description of the play and sort of what went into it as him as an athlete preparing for moments. Now, unfortunately, some freaking person here cuts him off when he's saying something fascinating. I'm ticked at whoever that guy or gal was. You'll hear it in a moment. But pretty good description. Here's Saquon.
Yeah, I mean, you always dream about having an iconic play and, you know, a spin move to a backwards jump.
Or, I mean, is that like you're just riffing or is like, do you rehearse that? I mean,
I'm not gonna lie to you.
Yeah.
You have times where in the offseason you joke around and you imagine stuff like that. But
who did you hurdle? Who's 22 on Jackson? Who is that? Did you talk to him after?
I think his name's Campbell. I saw he did like a little interview about it. He was fun, he had fun with it. But yeah, that jump, I could say I work all as hard as I can, and I do, but God took his time on me a little bit when it comes to this football thing, and I just got lucky there.
All right, really cool answer. I do wish the frickin' dude hadn't cut him off when he's describing in the offseason how he thinks about these things. And it's like, oh, who's your hurdle? Who cares who you hurdled? Who cares? That's annoying. Anyway, pretty good answer from Saquon. Unfortunately, it got, you know, cut off a bit. All right, let's get to the Cooper DeJean play. So let's get to Merrill's call in the Super Bowl. Of course, you'll remember it was 10-0 at this time. And then the DeJean play kind of begins the romp, if you will. Because Cooper DeJean's touchdown and AJ's touchdown, because of Zach Bond's interception, they happened in a relatively short period of time. Let's listen. Let's go back less than 2 weeks ago now. Super Bowl 59, and certainly one of the great plays in Eagles history.
It is 3rd and 16 for the Chiefs. Face it, the staunchest defense of the season. Back goes Mahomes. He's looking. It's intercepted. It's intercepted. Running with the football to the 25. Down the far side is DeJean. And DeJean is in for a touchdown.
Cooper DeJean, a pick six in the Super Bowl on your birthday. Happy birthday, kid.
So good. You know, Rube, that's the moment where I was at my brother's with my mom and Amy and my sister-in-law and their kids. That was our biggest moment of celebration, the whole, because, you know, the kneel down's a kneel down at the end of the game, but that was the moment where we went wild.
As you should have.
Right?
And I heard that Amy was with you guys? I didn't even know the whole final.
She came through.
Wow, what a gamer.
She did well.
That's the most important statement you just made
now,
about that.
Yeah. We would have blamed her forever if the Eagles collapsed in the second half because she left at halftime.
Well, of course.
But could you imagine that, James?
I was planning to leave where I was at halftime, and I didn't leave because I was like, I can't go.
But she showed up. But she showed up where she had to.
Better instinct than you have.
First, always. Clearly. Always. All right, let's get to Cooper DeJean. He was on yesterday with the Midday Show. So Joe and Hugh, middays with Cooper DeJean yesterday, and he gave a description of the interception.
We were playing zone coverage, and it was a rollout pass, kind of, and there's a guy to the flat, and Zach actually went and took that guy to the flat, which allowed me just to play off of him and, you know, fall back inside for anything that might be coming back across the middle. Just from watching Mahomes, you know, he likes to, you know, he can make any throw on the field, and I've seen him throw across his body multiple times and complete passes. So I just saw him coming across, and you know, Mahomes was looking there, so I just stepped right in front of it.
Pretty cool stuff.
Did you take issue with Amy leaving?
Guys, back to this. I'll just say this. I was concerned for her. If the Eagles collapsed, she would have been blamed forever.
Oh, yeah.
That's very thoughtful.
I was.
It just was. It is what it is.
But I was so appreciative that she was there for the first half, because the whole point was for the Eagles to win the Super Bowl and for her to do what needed to be done to help that cause.
But you were already formulating blame.
Well, up 24-0, I felt
her way.
But I felt pretty confident up 24-0.
But you were worried about what had happened at 22.
Yeah.
But
also 23, all that stuff, you know? Yeah.
All of it.
Okay. And you were a smidgen upset that she was taking
off. Smidgen upset. Yeah, Dave Matthews giving away a pair of his tickets today for when he's in town this summer. In honor of Petullo replacing Kellen Moore, we ask you for a notable replacement, good or bad. Ruben Amaro, we ask you, was Ruben Amaro, ready for this, Seltzer, a good replacement for Pat Gillick?
I thought you were going to say for Lenny Dykstra. I was for about 1 minute.
No, we know that answer. No, I'm just playing around. Hey, life advice with the Hammer coming up in about an hour. Facebook, Twitter, and the text line, three ways you can get to Seltzer with what is going on in your life that you need some help with. And I'll try to get you some good advice coming up in an hour. Give you advice right now. If you got Ruben Amaro in studio, ask him some Phillies questions. We'll do that this segment on some topics we have not addressed in a while as the Phillies get closer to the season. Some important points to hit on. So we'll get to that. Elliot in about 20 minutes. Phone calls right now. We'll also get to something Jaws said to us about Jalen Hurts and Petullo recently. Let's get to Mark in Delaware. Mark, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Great, Mark.
So I actually... I'm okay with them promoting Petullo. You know, for years we've complained about Hurts having a new offensive coordinator, you know, time after time again. And I know that, you know, this is a new offense coordinator, but at least it's someone that he's familiar with. And I would think that Hurts was probably consulted on this and he was okay with it.
Well, I don't know. I just literally don't know. I know that it's more important to get the right guy than for the player to think it's the right guy.
It didn't sound like he thought he was even considered for the position. It sounded like he didn't even think he fit into that category of coach. I mean, he said he's never, and then he thought better of it.
Right.
He was going to say, I think, called plays, I think.
Yeah, but I honestly think that's just how Jalen answers questions sometimes.
True. And he did think better of it, and he didn't say it. So, you know, I guess if it didn't come out of his mouth, maybe I shouldn't attribute it to
him. It was a little wonky, because then he did say something along the lines of believe in him or confidence or whatever that phrase was. So it was, you know. Mark, I want to play that audio for our listeners that haven't heard it yet. Give me an answer, a notable replacement.
All right, so after, I was going to say Ruben Amaro, but, you know, you just took that from us. So after the Phillies let Larry Boa go, they brought in this guy named Gary Varsho, who went 1-1 as their manager.
I thought you were going to say Avante Jesus, but go ahead.
Oh, no. But after Gary Varsho, I'm sorry, they brought in this guy named Charlie Manuel.
Charlie. I love it. All right, Mark, good answer right there, man. You know, Rube, you were part of the front office at that point.
Yep.
The Jim Leland calls, and I was one of them. Shame. And then when he got to the World Series quickly, what, the Tigers, I think it was?
Yep. Tigers, yeah, with Dombrowski.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, boy, was I in a bad mood when that happened. But Charlie, you know, he goes down as an all-time Philadelphian, Rube. He really does.
He does, and I know there was a lot of criticism about that. But, I mean, at the end of the day, it was a gutsy move by Ed Wade. He felt like that was the right guy and the right personality. We went from, you know, Larry Bowe, who was very aggressive, and to a guy who, you know, handled the clubhouse pretty well. And listen, those two guys are great friends now.
I know.
They're really, really close, which is cool. But, you know, Charlie just happened to be the right fit for that team. And that's how it works out. Sometimes you have the right fit. It doesn't mean that Larry Bowe is not a great manager and a great tactician, but sometimes it's just about fit. And in this case, that's what it was.
Charlie also had way better players than Bowe had. I mean, the reality is the organization's
talent
pool went way up.
And I think what Larry did was sort of set the tone as far as, okay, what it takes to win. And I think it got to the point where, you know, some of the players had gotten to that point, understood it. And then, you know, and then it made the right sort of transition to have, you know, Charlie, take it from there.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so the Jalen Hurts answer about Kevin Pitullo, which I believe was early last week, came up with the last caller. Let's listen to that answer. Then something Jaws said about the answer when he joined us earlier this week. So Kevin Pitullo, the new offensive coordinator, when Hurts was given this answer, it's before that news came out, but the possibility existed. Here's Jalen on Pitullo recently.
He said continuity, Kevin Pitullo potentially could be a candidate. You know him and work with him. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about that idea?
Yeah. Kevin Pitullo has never been he'd have a different role. So it's hard to compare, you know, that role to this role because his job is going to demand something totally different of him. And I have a lot of confidence in him and what he's shown. However, I know, you know, over the years I've learned that's out of my jurisdiction. And so kind of just taking things as they come and, trying to go out there and be the best I can be and just learn and evolve.
All right, so, you know, last week, now John asked Jaws about that, and you can hear John's opinion about how he feels about it in this question to Jaws. Let's get to the exchange earlier this week.
It didn't sound like Jalen was as, I don't know, enthusiastic about that or as into that. It sounded like he... It was a strange answer, and I don't know if we have that or not.
I get that impression. I just didn't. I think it was the right answer. It's not his decision. You know, I'm sure behind closed doors they'll ask him and his feelings that, but ultimately, you know, it's the front office making that decision. Howie and Jeffrey are going to make that decision. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, they will make the right decision. And I sometimes, in the past, when they ask quarterbacks around the league when someone gets fired, you know, who do you want? And, you know, they always have an input, well, I want this guy or that guy. I think they're dead wrong in making that assumption. It's not their decision. Your position is quarterback. Play quarterback. You don't make personnel decisions. Do your job, as Bill Belichick would like to say. And don't get involved in other areas where you can get yourself in trouble. So I think his answer was spot on.
You know, John, I go in a lot of directions here. I'll say this. The Brian Johnson thing to me was, for me as a fan, talk show host, a bit of a lesson in, I kind of don't care what the player thinks. You know, like,
that was his guy.
He was his guy, and it was a disaster. Like, I, you know, and I'm not saying this to dog Jalen. I mean, this is no disrespect.
Any player is your point.
He's earned respect. And he's not Michael Jordan. Like, it's maybe not every player, James, you know what I'm saying? Like, some players, I think, have
Peyton Manning at the end of his career.
Pretty much.
Yeah, I get it.
You know, like, I trust Howie and Nick's assessment of who's best for Jalen Hurts.
And don't you think...
Like, a little more than Jalen. But look, I could be wrong, but that's where I'm at.
There was two things in this. I was to unpack this. Jalen was just being honest. The guy has never been in this situation. And one of the things that I learned over the years is that, hey, you might have a great coordinator. You might have a great, you know, pitching coach who's a bullpen coach, and then you sort of elevate him to the pitching coach, and you're like, maybe he, I put him out at, you know, in an element that he's not all that comfortable doing. It's a different role. That said, I do trust in Howie, and I do trust in Sirianni to make the right decisions because they know how important it is. Because they've just gone through it.
Right. And look,
they literally have just gone through it. So I feel confident that they made the right choice here because I believe that they feel that this guy can make that adjustment.
I tend to agree with you, Ruben. And I'll say this. Aaron Rodgers, a year ago, had accomplished way more than Jalen Hurts has accomplished at this moment. The Jets gave Aaron Rodgers, I mean, all sorts of power. Now, look, I think Aaron Rodgers is a pain in the ass in a way Jalen Hurts is not at all. So I don't want to say it's apples and apples, but I'll say this, John. They were giving Aaron Rodgers everything he wanted.
He's bringing in his receivers.
His coordinator.
His coordinator.
It was a disaster.
His coaches. His strength coach.
Yeah.
Like,
it's very dangerous.
His Jets.
Super dangerous because you, as a player, you view the field differently than the front office. And you have to, there's a reason why one guy's a player and there's another reason why another person is is a GM and or a decision maker.
Yeah. Well, you
and,
saw how it worked for Aaron Rodgers and the Jets. It did.
Guys, it's different. And when you start, allowing the players to make decisions that are long-term, short-term solutions, it makes it very dangerous.
But yeah. I will say, I don't think they would have made this choice for Petula if they hadn't observed that Jalen has worked well with him over the past couple of years. I mean, I just don't think that would happen.
Well, I generally agree with you.
Totally
I'll frame it this way. If they think that Petula is the right guy to bring the most out of Jalen, like part of the DeFilippo thing with Carson, apparently, was, and we've heard this from a lot of people, that
Coached him hard,
yeah. Challenged him.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's not always about who's your buddy? It's just who's going to get the most out. Now, look, to your basic point, Rhea, you have to have basic respect and
workability. They've had to have observed that they work well together.
The other
thing is, you mentioned Morningweg. There could be, maybe they bring in a veteran guy to help Petullo. You know, I mean, listen, you know, we know how much he loves Frank Reich.
Yeah.
You know, bring somebody in as, what's the favorite line? The consultant?
Sure.
Fangio was it.
A couple of years back.
So, that's a possibility.
Yeah, that
so
is.
Was so Matt Patricia, and then he became the defensive coordinator.
But you want to know something?
Right.
We were all right about Matt Patricia.
I agree.
None of us wanted him here.
But it just felt wrong, Rhea. Yeah. It felt wrong.
It did.
John dug it because he thought Patricia was accomplished, which he was. But I just thought the Patricia thing from the outset, it just didn't sit well with me.
The beauty of Petullo for me is that he's observed what's worked and what hasn't worked.
Yeah.
And if he's really a good coach, and they obviously think that he is, he's observed the pluses and he's observed the minuses, and hopefully he has learned.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing digital deals for members. Signature Farms chicken, split breasts, drumsticks, or thighs, buy one, get one free of equal or lesser value when you buy two. Or a wheat variety bread, 24-ounce selected varieties, buy one, get one for free of equal or lesser value when you buy two. And Progresso soup, 18 to 19-ounce selected varieties, buy two, get three free of equal or lesser value when you buy five. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Nick's Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Nick's, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Nick's Menswear, your friend in style.
Through the process, over the last several years of what's going to work for this ball club,
and he's using all the same words and languages, and it's all. There won't be a new learning process.
That part helps.
For anyone.
Yeah, that part helps. All right, some Phillies questions for Ruben. We'll get to that shortly. Plus, Elliot in about 10 minutes. Let's go to Bill right now. Bill, good morning.
Hello?
Bill, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, guys. Love the show. Hey, thanks, I have a notable Bill. Replacement.
Yes, sir.
But before I give it, I just want to say it's the first time on air since 1982.
Get out of here.
Wow. Welcome aboard, Bill.
Billy.
Hold on.
Don't you lose my
number. We didn't exist in 82.
The question is, who'd you call? So here are the options. You got Irv Homer. You got Fredericks. You got DeBella. You got an early Eskin. You got, I'm going Irv Homer. Who'd you call, Bill? Bill Campbell.
You could have said Mickey Charles. You could have said Henderson. You could have said Frederick.
Don Henderson.
Wow.
But it was Howard.
There you go.
So an upgrade this time.
That's
that
great.
Well.
That's great. Yeah.
I attempted to talk boxing, Alexis Arguello and Aaron Pryor, but he didn't know anything about boxing.
Well,
so
most people would not have been able to answer that question. I mean, I'm the hammer, and I couldn't answer one box. The only boxing question I can answer right now is who was the heavyweight champion 25 years ago?
Yeah.
I don't even know who the heavyweight champion is right now.
I know.
Is it still that Tyson Fury guy? I have no idea.
No clue.
No, I don't think
Tyson
anyone knows.
Gone, nobody cares.
Does Tyson Fury know?
Anyway, Bill, all right, good stuff, bud. Give me an answer here for a notable replacement.
So like 100 years ago, 1925, Yankee first baseman had a headache.
Oh. It's a big one.
Lou.
That's
Wally and
Wally
Lou.
Pipp Wally Pipp.
Took the day off.
Wow.
Lou Gehrig took the next 2,130 games.
That's so good.
That's going to be hard to beat.
Bill, what a great answer, man. And of course, you know, Lou would have kept going, but, you know, the ALS set in, and he didn't initially know what it was, but he knew he'd have stopped playing initially to figure out what's going on with my body.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
All right, Rube, I'm really looking forward to the Phillies season. Obviously, fans are in a Phillies worse mood now than 12 months ago. Because it's been 3 years in a row losing in the playoffs, and the charm of being the team that never makes the playoffs and then making it and two good runs.
And then to whom they lost
and how they lost, has sort of set in. So let's cover, or to use a baseball term, touch some bases that we haven't talked much about lately. I'll give you another one, go around the horn a little bit here. Couple quickies. We'll just move fast because I want to fire through a lot.
Yep.
The Phillies closer is a person or a committee?
Well, it's going to be a committee, but I think it's going to end up being, at some point, it'll be Kirkring.
Over Romano, really?
I do think so at some point.
Okay.
And I like Romano, and he's going to be the guy at the outset. But
I think he'll get the first shot, right, Romano?
Yes, he will.
Okay. Next question. The Phillies traded for Jesus Luzardo. They have a quality fifth starter in a way that is either never before, or if you want to say Blanton was quality enough, or the young guy that year, the Vannable, was quality enough, which he was, as a good fifth starter. But generally, a team doesn't have a good fifth starter. So right now, the Phillies for 3, 4, and 5, in some order, after Wheeler and Nola, have Ranger, Sanchez, who was phenomenal last year, and Luzardo, who's had past success. How do you rank them? 3, 4, 5. Look, it doesn't really matter for April. It will matter if they're all healthy in October, because you're only going to have four guys to pitch in October as starters. How do you currently rank Luzardo, Ranger, and Sanchez?
Oof. Tough.
Good problem to have.
It's a great problem. I think it's the best rotation in baseball. I really do.
I think it's the
best rotation in baseball. And people, well, they haven't done very much. Well, guess what? Getting Luzardo, if he's on the field, this is the best rotation in baseball because I think believe that Suarez will be pitching, having the season of his life. Because he's pitching for his free agency, and he will have the season of his life, I believe.
So Ranger 3? Because he was having the season of his life last year until he got hurt halfway through. He was the best pitcher in baseball for two and a half months. Yeah. He was. Number one.
His body was...
That broke down.
Ranger, Sanchez, Luzardo.
Okay.
And listen, they're all interchangeable because they have unbelievable ability. This is a great rotation. And God bless. I hope these guys stay healthy.
Right. And then Painter is
he's coming,
but he's put his bullpen this year.
He's coming.
Maybe starter next year.
I don't
year.
Think he's going to be in the bullpen. I think he's going to be a starter. And I think at some point they might go to
this
a 6-man rotation.
He's a starter.
Painter.
Yeah.
He will be starting this year at some point.
Midsummer.
No doubt.
I'm surprised by
no
that.
No doubt. No doubt in my mind he will be starting for the Phillies in some capacity.
Rob Thompson said it to you in the podcast.
They will not put him in the pen. They will not do that.
But they will in the playoffs, right?
Maybe.
If your other guys are healthy.
Maybe. He might be one of the starters in the playoffs.
If he's that good.
He's that, he is that good.
Okay. All right. All right.
What month?
Summer?
I spy. Painter with my eye.
End of June.
The summer wind.
End of June. End of
Andrew June. Painter comes walking in.
I'm peeping him.
End of June.
All right, I got a couple more here, Rube. We'll talk to Elliot shortly on the birds. A few more. So I'm higher on the Phils than a lot of people who were so down on them based on last year. I think they got still a great shot to win a World Series.
Yes, they do.
One of the five best teams in baseball, all that good stuff. But I am in a bad mood regarding center field. I mean, I'm annoyed that it looks like it's still a Rojas-Marsh thing. You know, how's it going to be any different? I mean, it just was so substandard last year. And I'm a Marsh fan. We all love Marsh. But, I mean, and then the Rojas thing. I mean, Rojas reminds me of guys I grew up with in the 80s. That it's great in theory, like Jeff Stone. What a great theory. But if you can't hit, you can't play.
They need to be better. Both of those guys need to be better. Marsh needs to be better, and he can be. I mean, these are both really good players, but hey, Charlie Manuel used to say it all the time, you have to be an extraordinarily good player to be an everyday player on a championship team, and they have to get better.
Yeah.
I think the defense that they will provide helps a lot. I think it's going to be a much better overall defensive outfield, even though Kepler's never really played left field a whole lot in the big leagues.
You think he's going to play left?
I think Kepler's going to play left, and I think Castillo will stay in right field. I don't think Cassie's going anywhere.
Okay.
Real quick question on that, because Castillo has played left field before. Why do you think they would? I mean, they originally brought Castillo in to play left field. Why would you put the guy who's never played left field in left field when Castillo's played it?
I just think Castillo is just gotten way more comfortable in right field. I think he's gotten way better. I mean, he is a serviceable right fielder right now. Is he fast enough to play right field on a consistent basis? He's fast enough for me because he makes the plays, he gets the angles, he works very hard at it, and he's gotten much better. Is he a double plus defender in right? Is he worth? No, but he is at least adequate, and I think you're going to get the athleticism that's necessary in left field out of Kepler, because he's a very good athlete.
All right, one more, Ruben. We're going to get to Elliott and back to calls shortly. One more. So this isn't a player, and this is going to probably be the longest answer because I think it's a little bit complicated. Mm-hmm. Team mindset for April and May. Here's what I mean. Last year, they were gangbusters. And they were gangbusters with a purpose, in part because they were in a bad mood the way it ended Game 7 of the NLCS. And we all admired the way they came out, hair on frickin' fire. And it did cross a lot of our minds that they may have peaked too early. If you're Rob Thompson, do you slow pedal April and May a little bit to try to preserve the tank? Because it's a long season, and October matters more than April. Is last year a lesson, or am I just talking out of my hiney right now?
Talking out of your hiney.
Play as hard as you can.
Yes, you just play. And the reason why they were so great in the first half is because their starting pitching was ridiculous.
Yeah,
they had probably no question in my mind that they were the best starting pitching in baseball. And Ranger Suarez went down. The other thing that happened was you had your shortstop go down.
Yeah.
And those are two huge pieces. When you have your rotation with Ranger getting hurt and, you know, things started to happen. I mean, Walker was not, you know, producing. I think that had a massive change towards the middle of the season. And, you know, when you lose a pitcher of that caliber, Ranger was the best left-handed pitcher in baseball at the time. They basically lost him for a while. And they lost one of the best offensive shortstops in the game for a while, a month and a half. Now, Edmundo did a nice job.
Yeah, but Trey never came back stealing bases.
He never came back being the same guy.
Never.
He was not the same. I mean, I looked at the numbers on Trey, and we talked about it. If you extrapolate the numbers from the second half of 23 and the first half of 24, 320, 370, 550, and 915. That was his line with, I mean, MVP numbers.
Yeah.
And so this guy, I know the finish was not great because he did not perform in the playoffs. A lot of guys didn't perform in the playoffs. You got to have a little bit more confidence in one of the best players in the game. He's still one of the best offensive players in baseball.
Okay, we'll see. Well, they were certainly banged up as the year went on, and it affected them. And an example is Ranger, who pitched, I think, three or four or five innings of game four without giving up a run. But because he struggled in the process of that game, they had to get Hoffman up in the first inning. They had to get Hoffman up in the second inning. You can't get the guy up 13 times in a game. It kind of screwed the game, even though, anyway, we know the deal. And then Hoffman was injured the whole deal. All right. Let's talk some football. Rube, I am really looking forward to this baseball season.
It's going
to
be a great
year. Both with you, with Ben, with the station, the show.
People need to stay positive about it because, I mean, I think it's a great segue for the Philly fans, and I think that they should stay positive about this team, even though they didn't make the big splash. I view this team as a contending team, and I view them as a contending team for the foreseeable future.
Good deal. All right, let's talk to Elliot Shure Park. So, Elliot with us today, brought to us by Colonial Hyundai. Shop online 24/7 at colonialhyundai.com. Colonial Hyundai, the fast, easier, better way to buy a Hyundai. We love talking some Eagles football with Elliot. Good morning, Elliot.
What up? How you guys doing?
Quite a bit, my man. That was a nice mini deep dive on the Phils. We'll do more of that in the coming weeks. So, Elliot, Petullo is the guy. I know you've got concerns on the basis, not so much who he is and his background, but that you were intrigued that they should go outside the organization for some fresh ideas. Walk me through your mindset, and do you think they got the right guy or not?
Yeah, so I think if, you know, we were a Tampa Bay Buccaneers station or something like that, and you told me they hired a 43-year-old, essentially assistant head coach coordinator from the Super Bowl champions that had one of the best offenses in the league, I would think that's a great hire. So, like, on the surface, I think there's no question Kevin Petullo is a really good coach. He has been Nick's right-hand man through this whole journey. He was with Nick prior to coming to Philadelphia, and they can obviously be successful together. So it's not an anti-Kevin Petullo concern I have. My concern is I view the Eagles offensive coordinator job as arguably the best offensive coordinator job in the NFL. You get to call plays. You have an unbelievable amount of talent on offense, and it's basically a head coach factory, right? Mm. Like, if you have any modicum of success there, you will become a head coach. So I viewed this as a chance to go outside the building and bring somebody in that could add 20% new ideas to the offense. Because my concern is, in 2017, when they promoted from within, it collapsed in 2018. In 2022, they promoted from within, it collapsed in 2023. And I know you can't point to just that, but I do think a big part of the struggles of teams that try to repeat or go back to the Super Bowl is becoming stale. And when you promote from within, I think you increase the chances of doing that.
Elliot, how concerned are you about Jalen Hurts' response to the idea of Kevin Petullo calling plays, being the offensive coordinator, using the fact that he, we think, did not call plays sort of against Petullo as a viable option for this position?
Yeah, so when Jalen talked about it last week at Locker Cleanout Day, his answer, I would say, was like lukewarm. I would also say, though, that he probably wasn't expecting the question. He only wanted to talk about the Super Bowl. So I don't know if that's the best indication of maybe how he feels about Petullo. I think Hurts is someone that's always valued continuity, or at least wanted to have continuity. And Petullo brings that to a certain extent. Like, Petullo's been in the meetings with him. He's been on the sidelines with him. He's involved in the play calling. So there is that level of continuity. But I just think when you lose your quarterback coach and your offensive coordinator, like, continuity is out the window at that point. So holding on for 20% of continuity just to potentially appease Jalen, I don't know if that's the best thought process. So I think Nick Sirianni and Jalen's relationship is in a good place for sure. I think it's much better than it has been at points. But also, like, Jalen now looks in the offensive room and the head coach is Nick and the offensive coordinator is Nick's guy. So I just think that's an interesting dynamic.
So let's talk about, I think, an even more interesting dynamic, Elliot. I'm going to ask you this question. Why is Frank Reich not the Eagles' offensive coordinator today? And I'll frame it with this addendum. Nick's guys, through his life, it sounds like, for football, have been his father, his brothers, his high school football coach, his college football coach, and Frank Reich.
Yeah.
Why is Frank Reich not the offensive coordinator?
So I think in this city, we romanticize Frank Reich just a little bit. And I understand why. Like, he helped him win a Super Bowl. Like, I completely get it. But Frank Reich has had almost no success since he left the Eagles. He sat there unemployed for the last, you know, year, I think it's been, if not 2 years. So maybe he doesn't want to coach. But also, I just, like, I don't think Frank Reich would have been a good hire. I think if you're going to, and this is the route I would have taken, the offensive coordinator to me should be a problem solver that has new ideas that are different than the ideas already in the building. Kellen Moore came in with different ideas, and they didn't overhaul the entire offense, and they went to a run-first thing, but he had different ideas. Kevin Petullo and Frank Reich, to me, are just extensions of Nick Sirianni. Yeah, they'll have some different ideas, but I don't think there's anything they're going to come up with that Nick hasn't discussed or that they haven't discussed. So I get the Frank Reich thing. He won a Super Bowl here. He deserves to always be viewed in a positive light in the city, but I don't think he would have been the right hire.
We have some guys who are free agents here, Elliot. Four of them that we all love. How many do you think is reasonable to expect we can bring back out of those four? Especially with the new news that we might have added another $26 million in salary cap available.
Yeah, so they didn't add $26 million in salary cap, just to clarify that. I know the cap went up $26 million. But all the projected figures already had the cap rising about $20 million. So the Eagles, with the news of that yesterday, they gained around $3 million in salary cap space.
Well, that sounds terrible, Elliot. That I was a lot more excited until you said that.
Trust me, I would feel that way too. It's like when you get a paycheck.
Apologize, Elliot.
I know.
What are you doing?
I won't be a buzzkill, but yeah. So they have around $20 million, I would say, right now in salary cap space, which is not nothing, but it is also not, I think they're 19th, 20th in the league. Now, we know they're really good at manipulating the cap, so they will be able to keep guys. Now, in terms of the four, I would add a fifth there. Like, Isaiah Rodgers is a big deal, especially if Slay's going to leave. He's an unrestricted free agent, so he's a tough guy to gauge for the market, but he's an important player to get back if you're going to let Slay walk. So of the main five or four, however you want to view it, I think Zach Bond will be back. I think they'll strike a deal. I think he'll be here. I think it'll be a major raise for him, but probably not as much money as people think. I expect Bond back in an Eagles uniform.
So right. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say I think Sweat's gone. Like, I don't think Sweat's going to be back.
Yeah, too much.
And then it comes down to Becton and Milton Williams. I think Milton Williams is going to get, like, paid. I think he could get upwards of $35, $40 million guaranteed, $20 million a year. Like, I think he is their best free agent. And so I think he's the one that will get paid. So then it comes to Becton. Like, does Becton want to take a bit of a discount and stay here? Do teams view him as a 25-year-old that's awesome? Or do they view him as a one-year product of being with Jeff Statlin? So I think one will definitely back, and I think there's a shot at two.
All right, Elliot, let's talk about Darius Slay. This one to me is also fascinating. I think these two statements are both factually true. Number one, this past season that just ended, he played well, for sure.
Yeah.
He was still above average, no doubt.
Above average.
I don't know about that. Statement two, he's definitely not as good as he was about 3 years ago. Like, definitely. So here's my question to you, Elliot. Does the James Bradbury 2023 disaster, and I mean freaking fiasco, after an exceptional 22 and all-time fall off the cliff 23, does that hurt Slay's chances of being retained by Howie Roseman for 2025?
I don't think the Bradbury thing factors into that. I think they knew when they signed Bradbury that at his age, like, the math was probably against him.
Slay's like really old, Elliot. I mean, by cornerback standards, he's like Yoda. You know, he's old.
Yoda was 900. He's not like Yoda.
He's the guy in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade who's defending the chalice, waiting to
fence. He might be older than Yoda.
He's
like 2,000 years old.
Elliot, what is Slay, like 34?
Yeah, whatever that Indiana Jones movie is you just referenced, sure, he's that old. But, like, I would say that when it comes to Darius Slay...
Watch the movie, Elliot!
I'm good. But when it comes to Darius Slay, like, he's also way better than Bradbury ever was. Like, let's be real. Bradbury was really good for, like, 3 years. Slay's been one of the better cornerbacks in the NFL. Now, all that being said, I think the reason he'll go is because they do have young guys there. Like, Isaiah Rodgers, I think, could be this team's starting corner for the next 5 years. Keely Ringo. I talked to Christian Parker at the Super Bowl, and he said the player you know, non-main starter guy that he's most excited about next year is Kelee Ringo. So I don't know if it's so much about the money with Darius Slay. I think it's more about getting the young guys a chance to go out there and play.
Do you know, Elliot, because we know the cap hit, if they move on from Slay before June 1 is really big. Do you know post-June 1 what it looks like?
So I don't have that off the top of my head. I do know that obviously post-June 1 is normally significantly less. But, you know, most years, and actually I would say in all my years covering the Eagles, like they normally have a way to just add a bunch of cap space, whether that's restructuring, they don't really have that this year. So there's just not a ton of ways. Now, Howie might do it because he's Howie and he always figures out a way. But just looking at the stuff that I normally see them do to add space, they don't have that type of flexibility.
All right, looks like the dead cap for Slay is almost $23 million.
Well, that's pre-June 1. We know that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Elliot, let me throw a couple more at you. And this is good stuff. Elliot Shore Parks with us. So, you know, we haven't talked about this at all since the season ended. Saquon's got 2 years left on his deal.
Yeah.
What happens? I mean, he looked as good as any running back has looked like ever. I guess it could be a way to create cap space if you kick money down the road, which he may want. What happens here?
So I think it's a great point by you. And the other name I would throw out there is Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. He got a below-market deal last year. He had an awesome year this year. And I would kind of compare both of them a little bit to the Hassan Reddick situation.
Yes.
Hassan Reddick had the 1 year on his deal, had an unbelievable year, wanted a new deal, didn't happen. So, like, they're kind of like that with Saquon and Chauncey. Now, with Saquon, you know, I kind of think they're at the mercy of whatever Saquon wants. Like, I just can't imagine them saying no to Saquon. But Saquon also got almost $30 million guaranteed last year. So he was well paid last year. Chauncey is a different situation. Like, Chauncey got $10 million guaranteed last year. You could argue he already earned all that in 1 year. He has a very low base salary. And I don't know, like, Chauncey's always, to me, felt like someone that feels he is viewed less than he actually is, both around the league, and I would imagine that correlates to his pay as well. So those are two to look at. And the other one we haven't brought up, Cam Jurgens is eligible for an extension. So, like, outside of just the free agents, they got a lot of people on the roster that are due for big money extensions. So that's why that $20 million cap number sounds like a lot. But it quickly starts chipping away when you realize all the things that happen.
Like, I'll just tell you, I'm fascinated by the Saquon thing. Obviously, from an Eagles standpoint and us as fans, it's easiest if Saquon doesn't want more. But we know T.O. wanted more after 04. We know Foles wanted more after 17. Foles was going to be back as the backup quarterback, but he's like, wait a minute here. I just won the Super Bowl. And they gave him basically like a thank you extra whatever million that was, bunch of millions. So, and it's a good thing they did it because Foles saved their ass in 2018. I'm just saying, I am fascinated to know if Saquon and his agent and his family are talking and saying, hold on a second here. Hold on.
For sure. 100%.
Hold on a second. This is the moment to say, I know we're only 1 year in, but my God, I was just the best player in pro football.
And you want to talk about having the public on your side.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I don't fully remember right the TO thing in 04, but like if Saquon said he wanted more money, I would think everybody would be in the camp of, well, you just pay him.
Totally. And it's and Elliot, it's not like when Bryce Harper started saying this a year or two ago when he still had 77 years left on his deal. Yeah. Saquon only has 2 years left. All right, Elliot.
Yeah, now again, like, they're only a year in. They don't normally redo after a year, but I do think it's a good thing to bring up.
Yeah. Elliot, great stuff, buddy. We'll talk to you next week, Elliot. Thank you so much, man.
Yep, sounds good. Talk to you next week.
All right, Elliot Shore Parks. All right.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.